people had no option but to get whatever treatment is available there.
Coronavirus spikes in the world's second most populated country. It's Tuesday, September 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Follow us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, U.S. street violence flares, comparing U.S. presidential candidates, absent virus oversight, internet from space, and movies return to theaters. It's all on today's VOA Asia. India registered nearly 79,000 new coronavirus cases on Sunday. That was the biggest single-day spike in the world since the pandemic began. The surge raised India's tally to over 3.5 million and came as the government announced the reopening of the subway in its capital, New Delhi. India, with the world's second largest population behind China, is also moving ahead with limited sports and religious events. The divide between India's urban and rural healthcare is stark. Big cities boast of highly qualified doctors, while most rural areas lack adequate health infrastructure. To bridge the gulf with the help of modern technology, the northern state of Himachal Pradesh has launched a telemedicine program in two remote areas. Anjana Pasricha reports on how residents in one of them are benefiting.
In the remote Himalayan hamlet of Bharmaur in Himachal Pradesh, there was no orthopedic to examine Ajay Singh's persistent backache. So the local medical center arranged an online consultation with a specialist in the southern city of Chennai. He prescribed a line of treatment that local staff monitors. Like him, scores access highly qualified doctors hundreds of kilometers away through a telemedicine program launched last November. The constant irritation in Sanjay Sharma's throat is improving since he started medication prescribed after a virtual consultation with a specialist.
We have this facility close to our house. I would have had to have traveled at least 10 to 15 hours to a city to consult a doctor. I have saved both time and money.
Although most of rural India struggles with inadequate health facilities, availing healthcare in these Himalayan villages has been specially challenging. The tiny population and bad weather make it hard to attract medical staff. The nearest big city is 400 kilometers away.
Most of the time of the year, these are cut off from the rest of the world because of the heavy snowfall and blockage of the passes connecting these locations to the rest of the district and the state. So people had no option but to get whatever treatment is available there, because either you have to airlift people, which at times gets very difficult.
Now local staff in two places, Bharmaur and Pongi, has been trained to conduct tests such as ultrasounds and electrocardiograms. Specialists in city hospitals access the reports online. Satellite technology helps overcome the poor connectivity in these areas.
We have been able to cater to about 3,000 consultations in OPD consultations, and more than 60 tele-emergencies have been stabilized at these two locations in since the inception of the program.
For this resident, a cardiologist's diagnosis of his brother's heart condition was timely. He needed quick attention.
The doctors told us he has a heart problem, a blockage. We went to Shimla City, where doctors put in a stent. That solved the problem.
The telemedicine program is also helping women whose health problems in rural areas often get neglected.
Doctors here told me to consult a specialist for my persisting headaches. It was diagnosed as migraines. The medicines I have been taking for the past month are helping.
Fears that these difficult roads will cut them off from medical care have been eased for residents in this Himalayan hamlet. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. India accuses Chinese troops of attempting to encroach Himalayan border. Reports say key aide to outgoing Japanese Prime Minister to seek party leadership. Scientists see downsides to top COVID-19 vaccines from Russia and China. China launches new probe into Australian wine imports. Australia hopes artificial intelligence can curb harassment of women. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you make a visit to VOA Asia on Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You're listening to VOA Asia. Demonstrations against racial injustice continued this past week after the police shooting of a black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin. President Donald Trump is to visit Kenosha later Tuesday, as we hear more from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
Demonstrators again took to the streets in Kenosha, Wisconsin, days after the police shooting of Jacob Blake. Blake was shot in the back 7 times. He survived, but his family says he is paralyzed from the waist down. Days after the shooting, a white teenager armed with a rifle opened fire on a group of demonstrators, hitting 3 and killing 2. Cell phone video showed him later still carrying his rifle and casually strolling by police. The incident has renewed calls for police reform. Racial injustice protests also continued in the city of Portland, Oregon, where one person was killed amid violent clashes between Black Lives Matter protesters and Trump supporters. Sunday morning, President Trump tweeted law and order, and his acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf, called for restraint.
If you're going to protest First Amendment right, please do that peacefully. Once you cross the line to violence, that is what's concerning to the Department of Homeland Security. That's what I'm focused on, making sure that we bring any type of violence in any of our cities to a close.
Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar rejected attempts by President Trump to paint his Democratic rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, as endorsing lawlessness, saying nationwide protests are raging under the current administration.
This isn't just happening in one place. It's happening all over the country. It is happening under Donald Trump's watch. We have a president that literally stands on the people's lawn and says, oh, do you want to be more safe? We are not safe in Donald Trump's America.
As protests continue, President Trump is due to visit Kenosha on Tuesday to meet local police and survey damage from recent demonstrations following the shooting of Blake. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe told President Trump that the strengthening of their two nations alliance would be maintained, even after Abe's departure from office. Abe announced Friday he was resigning because of poor health. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Now that the Republicans and Democrats have held their conventions to nominate their candidates for President of the United States, they were scaled back versions of what President Trump wanted and what the Democrats wanted, as both produced different versions of virtual conventions. VOA Steve Reddish examines how the two conventions were held. Perhaps a glimpse into how future conventions and political rallies around the world might be held.
Republicans started their convention with a sharp contrast to Democrats, conducting the roll call vote of states to renominate President Trump during the day, away from primetime viewers, and with a fraction of the 2,500 delegates attending. Democrats used their roll call vote as a virtual cross-country journey, with delegations showing off a bit of their state while casting votes by video. Matthew Continetti is a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
I actually think the virtual convention has been a boon to both parties. For one thing, the virtual convention allowed the DNC to really skirt the real intra-party differences among Democrats. You didn't have any huge protests or loud calls of support for Bernie Sanders, say, when his nomination was put into play. And you also didn't have those chants of lock her up, which were interspersed with among all the speeches at the RNC 4 years ago.
While Democrats made generous use of low-tech videos to deliver short speeches, Republicans tried to replicate the staging of a live convention using a mix of recorded and live speeches from a grand auditorium. Only a handful of sitting elected Republican officials spoke. Former President George W. Bush did not. Vanessa Beasley is a communications professor at Vanderbilt University.
The absence of the old guard of the Republican Party is definitely meaningful this year. As we've noted, you want to show the continuity of the party itself. You want to show the parties behind you. And the absence of key figures signals this year that that's not necessarily the case.
Instead, many of the featured speakers for Republicans have been members of the president's family and their significant others. Again, Matthew Continetti.
If the goal of the convention is to enthuse his voter base, maybe remind them of why they voted for Donald Trump 4 years ago, a family member is just as likely to do that as a Republican elected official, and perhaps even more likely, since one thing we know about the Trump base is that they are extremely suspicious of politics as usual.
First Lady Melania Trump expressed sympathies for those who have been affected by COVID-19. Other convention speakers praised the president for his handling of the crisis. While Democrats spent much of their convention criticizing Trump for not doing enough about the pandemic, the politics of it played out in some more subtle ways.
Joe Biden, of course, talked to his guests via Zoom remotely. And whenever Biden was in proximity with other people, he always was sure to model the use of a mask. Donald Trump, on the other hand, conducted his panels in person in the White House, and there were no masks involved. I think that speaks to larger differences between the two parties, not only on how to approach the coronavirus, but also the future of America in general.
And both parties claim the other is painting a dark picture of the American future if the opposing candidate wins. Again, Vanessa Beasley.
I think what's interesting about this moment is that that optimism as a claim is being manifest quite differently. In the Democratic National Convention, it was almost a more somber and intimate tone, some sense of even some mourning, especially when they showed pictures of people whose lives have been lost to COVID-19. And the optimism in the Republican case was manifest in terms of a higher volume, a tone of what will happen if the future is left in the hands of the Democrats.
Without a live audience to react and applaud, speeches have been shorter at both conventions, but fewer people watched either convention on television than did 4 years ago. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. The Czech Senate speaker has called for closer economic and trade ties with Taiwan at a business forum in Taipei amid vows of retaliation from China. Beijing considers self-ruled Taiwan part of its territory. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, during a novel coronavirus pandemic that has taken the lives of more than 170,000 Americans, five former directors of the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control have been asking, where is the CDC? The former directors say the CDC's response to the pandemic has fallen short and that its traditional lead role has been sidelined. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
This is where CDC experts track every major outbreak in the world. They have helped stem the spread of Ebola, tracked the progression of a pandemic flu, partnered with the World Health Organization to end polio, and much more. Dr. David Satcher, one former director, says countries around the world look to the CDC for health information.
See, what I remember is that whenever there was a major issue in the world, people called the CDC before they called the World Health Organization, even though there was a very good working relationship between the CDC and WHO.
In dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, CDC critics say it has failed, that its first coronavirus test was tainted. Yet five former directors still in health leadership roles defend the agency, saying much was unknown at the beginning. Dr. Julie Gerberding is now a vice president at the pharmaceutical giant Merck.
What I would love to be able to do is to rewind the tape, because we do know some things for sure about this virus. We know it's incredibly transmissible, and we know that most people are still susceptible.
When Dr. Tom Frieden headed the CDC, he made several trips to West Africa during the Ebola crisis to see how the agency could help end the epidemic. He says with any new disease, the unknowns are far greater than what is known.
The more we learn, the more we know, the better we can control it.
Dr. Frieden heads a global health initiative called Resolve to Save Lives. All five doctors say it's time to put politics aside and pull together to end the crisis. Dr. David Satcher says there's no substitute for strong leadership.
Somebody needs to call attention to what we have to do together. And that's a level of leadership that for which there's no substitute. It's at the level of the president.
President Trump has been pushing for schools and businesses to reopen, even though the virus has not been contained. Dr. Richard Besser says it's a mistake to ignore or rewrite CDC guidelines.
If you have politicians saying that CDC guidance is a barrier to getting children back into school instead of the roadmap for doing it safely, the whole system breaks down.
Since the coronavirus broke out in the U.S., the information comes from the White House. The former CDC directors say the information is sometimes wrong, dangerous, or misleading.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning?
The president later said he was being sarcastic. After leaving the CDC, Dr. Jeffrey Copeland established the Global Health Institute at Emory University in Atlanta. He says everyone must work together to end this pandemic.
We need to feed truth back to the American public and to use those truths with our scientific evidence to control this disease.
Dr. Jeffrey Copeland says everyone must work together to end this pandemic.
If we could all just be pulling in the same direction, we would make considerable progress quickly.
A White House spokesman told VOA the administration and the CDC have been working together since the start of the pandemic, and that the president's highest priority is the health and safety of the American public. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, the man-made mega constellation orbiting Earth may one day bring internet to remote parts of the world. But astronomers say the cost to research is high. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us the week in space.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition and liftoff for the Falcon 9. Go, Starlink.
For weeks now, VOA has been reporting on the SpaceX mega constellation under construction in Earth's orbit. The commercial spaceflight company continues to successfully launch batches of its Starlink satellites to build a floating broadband internet network. SpaceX says the service will connect online remote and underserved parts of the world. But astronomers say the satellites are an eyesore for observation labs. Joined by engineers and commercial satellite operators at a recent scientific workshop, astronomers released a report saying they simply can't see beyond the brightness and interference of satellite networks like Starlink. Reports indicate the news caught everyone, including SpaceX, by surprise. Meanwhile, astronomer Cees Bassa captured this video he posted to YouTube from near an observatory in the Netherlands. He called the lights a sight to see, but says after some research, it appears that about one in every 100 Starlink satellites in orbit will remain bright and visible most summer nights above Asia, North America, and Europe. SpaceX aims to have 1,600 Starlinks in orbit by year's end and has federal approval to launch nearly 12,000 in total, with eyes on 30,000 more in the future. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
As New York City slowly and carefully returns to a relative normal after weeks of strict lockdown measures to stop the spread of coronavirus, movie theaters in the Big Apple are hoping to open their doors again. In the meantime, New York City outdoor movies have become popular again during the pandemic. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Here, there is no need to do temperature checks, wash hands with sanitizer, or use masks. With the Manhattan skyline as a backdrop, any movie is a masterpiece, Back to the Future especially.
With the world that we live in now and social distancing, this is an easy date while still social distancing. So, dating 2020.
COVID, like you can't go to the movies, you can't go in anywhere else. It's like a chance to sit out here and take in a movie and see like the skyline and just something different.
New York City is being careful about experiencing so many deaths earlier this year as a major coronavirus hotspot. While the movie theaters are ready to reopen, their doors will remain locked for now.
Right now it's closed along with our film center and it hasn't been open since March 12th.
Leslie Kleinberg is the executive director of the Lincoln Center Film Society. She has yet to receive any instructions from city or state authorities regarding reopening the Lincoln Center cinema halls. However, some serious prep work has already been done. The ventilation systems have been refurbished, the movie collection has grown.
Because normally we'd be restricted to the physical theaters, and so now we can actually program, you know, 8 or 9 films at a time.
The city's annual film festival, which starts in late September, won't be constrained in any way. All the movies will be shown in New York's open spaces.
We want the New York Film Festival to be a real festival of New York. Normally, we actually have the festival exist only within the confines of 65th Street. And this year, going out into the city is very significant for us. We think film can be a way for the city to open up, for people to come out and enjoy the arts again.
Chain movie theaters around New York still display posters from March. But in anticipation of reopening someday, they have to do some major adjustments. The movie theaters will have to operate at only 30 to 50% capacity. Ventilation systems have undergone major renovations, and in between screen times, each auditorium will be thoroughly cleaned. When they are finally allowed to reopen, one movie theater chain promises to only charge 15 cents. That's how much AMC, the largest U.S. movie theater chain, charged for a ticket 100 years ago. Small private theaters will have a harder time adjusting to the new reality, but they are working on setting up online screenings. A drive-in theater might be the only option for now in New York City, and until fall with its rainy weather takes over, it might also be the most enjoyable. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today. If you've missed any part of VOA Asia, you can easily catch our entire 25-minute program by visiting us at our website, voanews.com. There you can download or stream our recent programs and take VOA Asia wherever you go. You can also continue with us online at VOA Asia Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all under the name VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team that brings you this program each and every day. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.